Geekscape.com.
The Uprising by Colin Jordan, Part 9. Targeting the House of Treachery. The House of Commons, better designated the House of Treachery, because of the congregation of traitors serving an alien occupation and control, arose, meaning ceased its proceedings, at 10 p.m. that day. This was after giving much of its attention at that sitting to the acts of rebellion of the BFF, which were now so widespread and so serious as to constitute a war within. The racial renegades, along with the racial strangers whose interests they served, then dispersed to their homes or venues of high living, under constant guard by the police, provided at prodigious cost to the suffering public. These members of Parliament were, as a prime part of policy of the BFF, given constant cause to feel they were in the front line of a real war. The purpose of this real war, waged with deeds and not just words, was, along with unending sabotage of the means and needs of the enemy, the destruction of its structures, facilities, and procedures, concomitantly the disablement of the system by the attrition of its functionaries. Thus was practiced a duality of material and mental damage. The latter amounted to a ceaseless campaign of every conceivable form of harassment by contrived obstructions and created alarms, warfare on the nerves, creating a state of stress so worrying and wearying as an ever-present daily condition, as to be severely harmful to health, morale, and performance. As these highly harassed members of Parliament later on in the night sought slumber despite their thoughts of the hidden foe, something untoward was about to happen at the House of Treachery itself, disturbing both to their nerves and to their procedures. A little before Big Ben, the famous clock nearby, struck 3 a.m., keen eyes able to survey the rear terrace of the Commons, overlooking the River Thames, might have been able to discern several frogmen emerging from the river, scaling the wall to the terrace by means of rope and grapnel, and then quietly forcing a door, and so gaining entry to the grandiose building. In doing so, they swiftly divested themselves of their underwater apparel, revealing underneath a uniform remarkably resembling that of the House of Commons security guards. To this, they added shoes from waterproof shoulder bags they carried, and into which they put what they had already taken off. The bags, into one of which the scaling rope and grapnel were placed, were hidden in a dark recess in the wall of the terrace. That they pursued the right route inwards without hesitation was due to the detailed information supplied beforehand by a former servant of the House of Commons. He had joined the rebellion and was even now included in the band of intruders to provide any additional guidance which came to be desired on the spot. Without hindrance or difficulty, they quickly arrived at the debating chamber itself. They took only a minute or two to seize the objective of their intrusion, which was the famous mace itself, reposing there as the authorizing symbol of parliamentary proceedings, and depart with it from that place where the ruination of Britain was planned and promulgated. Within a very few minutes more, they had, without mishap, not counting as such, needing to waylay and chloroform a patrolling watchman, retraced their way to the terrace, slid down the rope, and disappeared under the surface of the river, its waters murky and mucky, as were the policies and practices of the politicians on its banks. They finally emerged at the point further along on the same side of the river at which they had initially entered the water. There, they divested themselves of their frogman's suits and flippers, placing them in a heavily weighted sack and consigning them to the watery depths. The mace went similarly to the bottom of the Thames. The concern and outcry which followed the discovery, some hours later, that the mace had disappeared was enormous. The whole of the premises and surroundings of both Houses of Parliament were rigorously searched, but to no avail. The indispensable symbol of sanction for the House of Commons proceedings, without which that House could not sit, had truly vanished. Therefore, that House could not sit that day, and for several further days, until a replica could be fashioned and delivered. Radio and television news bulletins just had to report prominently the sensational suspension of Parliament because of the mysterious disappearance of the mace. This was definitely something which could not be given the silent treatment. Naturally, the media and the authorities were quick to solve the mystery by attributing the disappearance, quite rightly, to the BFF. The intensity of their denunciation of it as a sacrilegious outrage was just about equal to the intensity of the rejoicing of the men who had made off with the mace and all their comrades of the BFF. Some 2 months after their deeply disturbing experience of the disappearance of the mace, the much-troubled gang of traitors and racial aliens in Parliament experienced another and much greater upset. This occurred on a fifth day of November, an anniversary of the gunpowder plot of Guy Fawkes, sometimes referred to as the only man to enter Parliament with honest intentions. The House of Commons was due that day to discuss a new and very drastic public security law to be introduced as necessitated by the scale